Merchant of Venice. The woman who felt the souls of 18th century British aristocrats needed saving and devoted her life to this fairly thankless task, and the ever-fascinating Oliver Cromwell and his behaviour in 17th century Ireland. Honourable idealist or murderous monster? Past historians, it seems, may have had a vested interest in branding in the latter. That's Making History this afternoon at 3 o'clock.
That takes us to 3:30 and the second of this week's stories about the gap between dreams and reality. Each tale involves a character whose perception of life is skewed by their inner world. Each culminates in a shift, either in the protagonist's perspective or in our view of their situation. Today's tale concerns a man who seems to be more interested in his television than his wife and kids, not to mention their rather unusual feline friend. The second of our Fantasies and Flipside series is at 3:30. But first, the afternoon play, a historical comedy set in England at the start of the 19th century. As the story opens, a cousin of the poet Coleridge is travelling to London on his way to a family wedding.
Bellingham and the Ambassador by Mary Baker. With James Fleet as Clement Guest, Celia Imrie as Quinta Hardy, and David Horovitch as Spencer Percival.
Do you have the time, sir?
I'm afraid not.
No matter. We'll be in London soon enough for my purpose. You live in London, sir?
No. I'm going to my niece's wedding.
A wedding? I'm on my way to arrange a funeral.
My condolences.
It comes to us all. Rich, poor, powerful, wretched.
Indeed.
Perhaps I might introduce myself. I'm John Bellingham.
Clement Guest.
There's a story about the funeral I'm going to arrange.
I knew it. They always have a story. But why do they have to tell it to me?
5 years ago, back in 1807, I was trading in St. Petersburg. And it was perfectly lawful trading, I don't care what anyone says. There was no reason whatsoever for the Russians to throw me into prison.
This is just like the time I tried to get to Cousin Samuel's wedding. That old sailor simply wouldn't stop talking.
And what did the British ambassador do to help me? Absolutely nothing. He refused to intervene. Just abandoned me to all the horrors of prison life. I had no idea such deprivation, such cruelty, such depravity existed. You see, I never went to public school.
Any sensible person would have thrown the albatross overboard. After all, there was water, water everywhere.
5 years of that prison I was forced to endure. 5 years! When I finally got back to England, I wrote at once to the Prime Minister. It's clearly his duty to do something about that useless ambassador. But did the Prime Minister reply to my letter? No. I wrote a second time. A third time. Never any reply.
If that person from Porlock hadn't turned up when he did, I'd be stuck there to this very day listening to the old sailor.
And how am I supposed to live without compensation, eh? The Ambassador, the Prime Minister, they're both determined to drive me to suicide. The government of my own country murdering me.
Samuel published that poem about me as petty revenge, nothing more, just because I'd missed his wedding. You can guarantee he'll never finish anything, but not this time. Oh, no. 142 verses.
It's up to me to rid the world of my killer before I die. Who has a better right to execute a murderer than the victim himself? You agree with me? Guest?
Yes, of course.
Well, it's my only justice. And once justice is done, I can die happy. Well, die at any rate.
I'll be the one who dies if I miss another family wedding. My sister will murder me. And Samuel would be halfway through the first verse of another poem about me before I'd finished breathing my last.
Good journey to London?
I'm not telling you about it, Samuel. I don't want to find myself in another poem.
I've made you immortal, Clement. Most people would be pleased.
Aunt Christabel wasn't. She never spoke to you again.
And I made her the beautiful heroine, too. Thank goodness for poetic license.
Well, why did you want to see me? Are you in debt again?
Of course I am. The Courier pays next to nothing for articles. And your sister made me send some of the money to my wife.
How is Sarah?
I've no idea. She's been really cross with me ever since I walked out on her and the children. She only writes about money, nothing else.
It doesn't surprise me.
I expect you have the same problem with Charlotte.
We're not discussing my wife.
Your sister told me you won't even write to Charlotte. At least Sarah and I are more civilized than that.
As I said, we're not discussing my wife. How many people do you owe money to?
How many people are there in London? If I promise never to put you in a poem again, would you...
It's too late for that promise.
Wordsworth said it was a very good poem. Well, at the time. He only changed his mind later on when I told him daffodils swaying in the breeze made me feel seasick. Not much sense of humour, Wordsworth.
You quarrel with everyone.
I never quarrel. It's the other people who quarrel with me. Wordsworth was the one who told me to go away and never come back. I was quite prepared to live off him. I'm very forgiving. But he'll soon regret what he said to me.
Why?
I'm going to write my autobiography.
You can't.
Why not?
The family would hate it.
Then they should have been nicer to me when they had the chance.
Are you planning to take revenge on the entire family and all your ex-friends in this book?
Of course not. Only on those who deserve it. I'm not vindictive. If you were generous enough to help me now, I'd write about you in the most pleasant way. Or not mention you at all. The choice would be yours.
And do you have an exact sum in mind in return for your silence?
Oh, you make it sound like blackmail.
Perhaps because it is blackmail.
Yes, that could be the reason.
Good journey, Clement.
No. I was trapped in the coach with a man who insisted on telling me about his plan to murder some ambassador. I can't think why these people always pick on me, Spencer.
You shouldn't encourage them by showing interest.
I didn't show the slightest interest.
And what about the time you missed Samuel's wedding? Held by a glittering eye, indeed.
Spencer, it's what happened. I told you at the time...
We noticed you turned up at the reception, though, in time for the free fee.
Read Samuel's poem. He accepted my account of what happened.
Only after you gave him money.
None of it was my fault. Any more than it was my fault some would-be murderer decided to travel to London today.
These things never happened to me.
He wrote to you, though, 3 times.
Who wrote to me? The murderer?
You didn't reply, so he picked on me instead.
He knew you were my cousin?
I didn't ask. I was far too busy not showing interest. If you attended to your correspondence, perhaps your relatives could travel in peace.
I suppose you think I should have written to that ancient mariner, too.
Nothing is ever your fault.
Murderers don't write to me 3 times and get no reply. After all, you are the Prime Minister, Spencer.
And so I have more important things to do than writing to madmen.
Well, because you didn't write to this Bellingham, he's now decided to murder whoever was British ambassador in St. Petersburg 5 years ago.
5 years ago? Your murderer does hold a grudge. Most unchristian.
What are you going to do about it?
Not much anyone can do until he's actually committed his murder. Besides, your madman really would have to be mad if he went to St. Petersburg now to trace the ambassador. Napoleon Bonaparte is gathering his army to invade Russia. You know that as well as I do. No, perhaps not as well. I am the Prime Minister.
The last time Bellingham was in St. Petersburg, the Russians threw him into prison.
Well, that should stop him murdering ambassadors. No need to bother about the matter, then. We often achieve more by doing absolutely nothing. I made that very point in the Commons only a week or two ago. Did you read my speech?
No.
People don't take an interest in politics. They just go around demanding votes and reforms when they're not busily smashing up machinery in the mills. Merely because places like Wolverhampton and Manchester have practically the same population as London, they seem to think they have some sort of right to be represented in Parliament. They were villages a few years ago, and should have been content to remain so, instead of getting jumped-up notions.
Have you ever visited the countryside, Spencer?
I travelled to Putney Heath only last year. And you know how fond I've always been of landscape paintings.
I don't think a landscape will stop Birmingham and Manchester demanding to be represented in Parliament. They have to pay taxes.
You're beginning to sound like an American.
But it is an unfair system. Reform is the only possible...
And now you sound like your sister... Do you know, Quinta actually gave me a copy of The Rights of Man last Christmas. She said I ought to read the thing, as I'd help get Payne charged with treason when it was published. She and Tom will be here soon, by the way.
Oh,
I didn't think I'd see them today. It is their daughter's wedding tomorrow.
Marry in May and rue the day. It's odd how often those old superstitions come true.
I hope you didn't say that to my niece.
Of course not. What do you think I am? Insensitive? I told Adela it was most unlikely to come true. Millions of married couples are utterly miserable, I said, and they can't have all had a wedding in May. You should know that, Clement. You married in April.
I don't wish to discuss the matter.
Samuel married in October. Another disaster. I didn't have the actual statistics to hand, but I assured Adela that she was just as likely to end up in wretched misery whichever month she chose for the wedding.
That must have encouraged her.
Yes, she said she hadn't thought of marriage in that way before. Young people appreciate sound advice. I don't care what Quinta said. Your sister can use unpleasantly forceful language at times.
The strain of the wedding, perhaps.
And Tom is still insufferable about being made a baronet. It's the least important title there is, as I keep pointing out to him. Hardly worth having. I don't see that he deserved any recognition at all, just because he happened to be standing by Nelson. Sheer luck the Admiral was killed at that moment.
I'm not sure Nelson would agree.
And I still maintain that preserving Nelson's body in a cask of brandy was downright disrespectful. Trust Tom to think of that.
If only Nelson had taken the trouble to speak distinctly, there wouldn't be all the gossip.
The man was dying, Tom. I don't suppose it's a time when you worry about your enunciation.
He only had to make a little effort, Quinta. I'm not being unreasonable. If he'd spoken with more care, the crew would have realized that he said kismet. It's an Arabic word meaning fate or destiny.
Why would Nelson suddenly begin speaking Arabic? He came from Norfolk.
I don't know why he spoke in Arabic, Spencer. He just did, with no warning. Kismet, Hardy, he said to me. It's unfortunate, but none of the crew happened to be fluent in Arabic, and that's how the misunderstanding came about. If Nelson had had any consideration for me, he would have made sure he spoke his dying words in English. After all, he'd been speaking nothing else the whole day. But no.
Never mind Nelson. Now, when will you finish testing those modified cannons, Tom?
Well, the trials were completed last week.
On time? That's amazing.
But we hit a snag, Spencer.
I'm sure you solved it in time-honored English fashion.
No, not really. We couldn't get the old ammunition to go into the new cannons.
Yeah, well, we can't ask for perfection. The trials are finished on time, and we can save hundreds of pounds in the manufacturing process. This war with France is costing a fortune.
You're not going to raise taxes again.
We'll have to. When Pitt had his brainwave about taxing income, he estimated we'd get 10 million a year. But we've never even managed to collect half that. People seem to have much less income than Pitt reckoned on. It's odd, I know, but you only have to look at the tax returns.
Then negotiate with the French. Once the war is over, no one will have to pay income tax ever again.
Talk to that jumped-up Corporal Bonaparte. Never. I'm not going to be known in history as the Prime Minister who caved into the French.
Then you'll have to give the army more money.
More money? They throw it away. You wouldn't believe the amount of food they get through. No wonder they win so few battles. I bet they can hardly move. And as for ammunition, Wellington never stops asking for more. I can't think what he does with it all.
If you want results, you'll have to pay for them.
I can't spend public money recklessly.
Is that why you use public money to bribe those voters?
Rumours.
Well-substantiated rumours. There was an article in the Courier that gave names and dates and...
I refuse to read any newspaper that allows Samuel to make his crazed views known.
At least he's earning some money for once.
Which he promptly spends on laudanum. Mm.
He's threatening to write his autobiography.
I'll deny all that, too.
All what?
All of whatever he says about me.
It's dreadful the way he's abandoned his wife and children.
Yes, it must be so embarrassing for Sarah, having to live off her sister's husband. Southey is an awful poet.
Well, not as awful as Samuel. He had no right to put me in a poem.
That's nothing to what I have to endure, Clement. And all because Nelson wanted to show off his language skills.
That's enough of that. Now, about tomorrow, Spencer, I expect both you and Clement to be at the church early. We don't want any more episodes like Samuel's wedding.
I've told you.
Don't worry, Quinta. I'll see Clement doesn't start chatting to any more ancient mariners or would-be murderers.
And keep his present with you as well. Then there's a chance it won't arrive crushed like a rag.
It can't. It's a vase.
Not very original, the vase.
I wasn't trying to be original. It's a wedding present.
Remember, Spencer, I'm trusting you to see that Clement is at the church with present on time. Mm-hmm. I hope that trust isn't misplaced.
I am the Prime Minister.
And the last time I trusted you, I was let down.
If you all distrust me so much, perhaps I might not make a speech at the wedding.
We haven't asked you to make one.
Don't worry, Tom. I won't let you down. I always make a speech at weddings. I don't have to be asked.
Yes, we know.
I've made a speech at every family wedding for years and years.
Yes, everyone.
How would you know, Clement? You're never there.
I missed one wedding. One!
You weren't there when Aunt Geraldine married Uncle Leoline.
That was over 30 years ago. I had measles.
Always some little excuse.
Nobody is going to miss Adela's wedding. We will not accept excuses. Everyone's to be there on time.
Unless the French land at Hastings tonight.
You've had some information.
It was a joke, Tom. If I didn't have my keen sense of humour, I'd never get through cabinet meetings. Bonaparte gave up the idea of invading England when I became Prime Minister. He's decided to tackle Russia instead. Just like Clement's madman.
It's not my madman.
You shouldn't look interested when people speak. That's a rule I follow, and I can get through whole days in the Commons without anyone saying a word to me.
Just stay close to Spencer tomorrow, Clement, and no one will approach you.
If anything, they'll hurry away in the opposite direction. It's the respect people have for high office. You wouldn't believe how many MPs refuse to be in my cabinet.
I believe you.
So do I.
I was surprised to find you were able to form a ministry at all.
Yes, the members were so in awe of me. They knew I had the full support of King George himself.
And is he any better these days?
Madder than ever, poor monarch.
And I'll be mad with you, Clement, if you don't turn up to the wedding. No feeble excuses about being held by glittering eyes.
But that's what happened. I told you. It was a...
He'll be at the wedding, Quinta. You have the word of the British Prime Minister.
This is the age of reason. I shouldn't have premonitions.
I had a premonition once. It was the moment Nelson looked at me and said, "Kismet, Hardy." I bet no one in the crew understands Arabic, I thought. And I was right.
Shouldn't we be on our way to the church, Spencer?
No, we've plenty of time, and I want to show you around the House of Commons. We call this the lobby. Yeah.
What happens here?
I don't think anything does, Clement. I just walk through it, that's all.
Now can we leave? I know what Quinta will say if we're late.
I'll just check with my secretary. There might be urgent business. I will be absent from affairs of state for some hours, remember.
Shall I carry the vase?
I promised Quinta I'd keep it with me.
But it looks so odd. You are the Prime Minister.
One who knows his responsibilities. Though if you'd had any consideration, you'd have chosen something less bulky as your present. Oh, there's my secretary. Yates! Yates! I wonder why he was hurrying away like that. He must have seen me.
Yes, sir.
Any urgent business I should attend to?
No, sir.
Any dispatches?
None, sir.
Any ships in from Canada?
No.
What about India?
No.
Australia?
No.
Any messages for me from anywhere at all?
Only the usual letters from Cranks. I threw them away, as you said.
Good. Anything I should sign?
Nothing, sir.
Excellent. Well, now that I've sorted out all the urgent affairs of state, I think it's safe for me to leave. Government won't come to a standstill in my absence.
Shall I take the package, sir?
This vase has nothing to do with government, Yates. It's my cousin Mr. Guest's wedding present. Now, you're quite sure I can safely be absent?
Oh, yes, sir. It's a normal day in the Commons. You won't be missed.
Perhaps I should tell the Cabinet.
They all left when you arrived, sir. Every one of them suddenly recalled an urgent appointment elsewhere.
But how extraordinary.
No, it's not. I've often gone whole weeks, months, without even seeing a single member of the Cabinet. Haven't I, Yates?
Indeed you have, sir.
Well, Clement, we can be on our way. Thank you, Yates.
But it is extraordinary. Look, over there. That man in the brown coat carrying a bundle.
Brown coat? You're right. That is extraordinary. No one has worn a brown coat for absolute years.
I've got a brown coat at home.
I hope you never wear it in London while I'm Prime Minister.
No, but...
That man looks like a peddler in his. What's a peddler doing in the House of Commons?
It's John Bellingham.
And who's John Bellingham?
The man who wants to murder the ambassador.
Then what's he doing here? Does he think we keep ambassadors in the Commons? People agitate for the vote, but they don't bother to learn the first thing about government.
Let's go before he sees me. Is there another way out?
I've no idea. Prime ministers don't skulk out of side doors. Anyway, if he's looking for an ambassador to murder, he won't want to stop and chat to you.
He's seen me. Oh, no, he's coming over. I knew we should have gone straight to the church.
Mr. Guest, fate
has brought us together again.
Indeed, Mr. Bellingham. I'm afraid I must hurry away, though. I'm about to attend a wedding.
And I'm about to arrange that funeral.
Perhaps I'll see you again sometime.
I doubt it. Many thanks for the encouragement you gave me when we travelled to London.
You encouraged Mr. Bellingham in his plan, Clement?
I only listened, nothing more.
But to find someone who would listen with sympathy was the encouragement I needed.
You didn't tell me you were sympathetic to the idea, Clement.
Mr. Guest agrees with me. It's essential that no one else's life is ruined by an official. An official who refuses to recognise his responsibilities. You're right, Mr. Guest. He must be stopped.
The wedding, Clement.
Mr. Bellingham, could you come back here later? My cousin might be able to help you.
Clement, whatever you say.
If you could wait until he returns.
I've already waited too long. There's no time left for me.
My cousin ought to help you.
Why?
Too late. It's hopeless.
One should never despair. It says so in the Bible. Or do I mean Shakespeare? I know it says something about not despairing somewhere.
No one will help me. I'd be ignored again. Day after day, no reply.
Yes, I'm sorry about your letters, but you know how it is. Prime ministers have so much correspondence. I'm sure my secretary will be sending you an answer very soon.
You're the Prime Minister?
In fact, the letter is almost certainly on its way to you now.
You're Spencer Percival?
Why not go home and wait for my reply?
Because I haven't any money left to go anywhere. And because I haven't any money left to keep myself while I wait.
Good points, both. However, sense would advise... Mr. Bellingham, guns are not permitted in the House of Commons.
Give me!
Help!
Oh, gosh! He deserves it!
It's all right. They've got him, sir.
Send for a doctor. Quickly, Yates.
Call a doctor, somebody. Quickly.
A doctor!
Spencer,
the doctor's on his way.
Is it a revolution?
I thought he wanted to murder the Russian ambassador. You didn't reply to his letters.
But no Russian ambassador has ever written to me, Mr. Guest.
He wrote to my cousin.
About me?
Of course not. He doesn't know you. But you should have replied. Oh, where is the doctor? Surely he should be here by now.
Oh, here he is, I think.
I'm here. I'm a doctor. Let me through. Stand back.
He'll be all right, won't he, Doctor? It's not a bad wound.
I'm sorry. There's nothing I can do.
But he can't be dead.
Oh, it must have been over very quickly. Almost at once, in fact.
But it's not possible.
Oh, yes, quite possible. Though it does depend on which part of the body gunshot hits. Anyone else hurt?
No, it was only the Prime Minister.
For the moment. This could be the first shot of the English Revolution.
It's all my fault.
Yours, sir.
Oh, take no notice. His mind's affected. It's the shock.
I had a patient once who was in shock. Her husband died tragically in a shooting accident. Out on a walk together when suddenly the pistol she chanced to have with her went off without warning. Twice. She became quite irrational with shock. Left for America with a much younger second husband only weeks later.
I could have prevented the whole thing.
Oh, I think not. She was quite determined to go.
I could have saved Spencer. He needn't be dead now.
Only the deity can raise the dead. You don't think you're God, do you?
Why would I think that? I'd have to be mad.
Oh, of course you're not mad. Absolutely not. Don't think such a thing. Perish the thought. Mad indeed. Certainly not.
Poor Spencer. He was only 49.
The ambassador will pay for it. Don't worry.
The younger Mr. Pitt was only 46 when he died. Terrible gout, poor man. Until I told him to drink 2 bottles of port every day. He never said a word about any pain after that. He would have been with us to this day if his liver hadn't failed him so inexplicably.
This is so like Spencer.
He couldn't help being assassinated, Quinta.
But he would choose today of all days for it to happen.
It wasn't exactly his choice.
Where is your wedding present?
It was shot to bits.
Don't be ridiculous, Clement. Why would someone shoot a vase?
Spencer was on the other side of it at the time.
Oh, you could never rely on Spencer. If he had taken you straight to the church as I told him to, he might have avoided being assassinated altogether.
At least it was over almost at once. He didn't suffer.
Whoever suffered, it was never Spencer.
You shouldn't speak about him like that now.
Am I supposed to mourn a great statesman? I never liked him. He never liked me.
Don't say that.
Well, you never liked him either.
It's different now.
We should like him for getting shot.
You know exactly what I mean.
1812 will go down in history as the year of the English Revolution. I told Spencer people couldn't be oppressed forever. Sooner or later they'll rebel, just as they did in France.
It isn't a revolution.
No one thinks I shared Spencer's politics. How annoying to be guillotined just because you happen to be someone's cousin.
You won't be
I'm sure I wouldn't mind half as much if I were executed for a sensible reason, but for being Spencer's cousin...
You won't be guillotined. John Bellingham shot Spencer.
And who's John Bellingham?
I told you about him yesterday. He's the man who wouldn't stop talking to me in the coach. I did tell you.
Not that he wanted to shoot Spencer. Understandable, but illegal.
I thought Bellingham just wanted to murder an ambassador, that's all. Thank goodness I didn't tell Samuel about him. I'd be in another poem before I knew what was happening.
Clement, who did you tell about this Bellingham?
Well, Spencer. Well, I suppose he doesn't count now.
It might seem a little odd you travelling into London with Spencer's assassin.
But I'd never met Bellingham before yesterday.
Then keep quiet about meeting him at all.
Why?
You never liked Spencer's politics.
Neither did you.
But I didn't travel into London with his assassin or meet him later at the Commons when I had Spencer in tow.
You make it sound as if I told Bellingham when to be there. Well, that's ridiculous. He didn't even know Spencer was my cousin then.
But you admit you discussed murdering ambassadors quite happily with Bellingham.
Only one ambassador, and I hardly said a word.
Then you took Spencer to the Commons where he was shot.
No, he took me there. I wanted to go straight to the church. The assassination was nothing to do with me. Well, I know it was my fault that Spencer died, but I wasn't part of a conspiracy to kill him deliberately.
Then stop saying it was all your fault and that you knew someone was roaming around London in search of an ambassador to murder. You mustn't tell anyone about this.
But I told Spencer's secretary. I think I told the doctor, too.
There's nothing like stout denial. You never said a word about Bellingham. They obviously misheard you.
Both of them?
Both of them. You were distraught, incoherent with grief. You deny everything.
But there's nothing to deny. Although Bellingham did happen to mention that I encouraged him.
You encouraged him to shoot Spencer?
Of course not. I thought Bellingham just wanted to murder an ambassador, remember?
You encouraged him to murder the ambassador?
I didn't encourage him to murder anyone.
Then why does he claim you did?
He imagined it. You know quite well I don't go around encouraging assassins. After all, it was my present he shot. I'll have to buy another one, I suppose.
Of course you will. After going out of your way to ruin poor Adela's wedding, it's the least you can do. But if Bellingham claims you encouraged him when he's on trial, it's
trial?
All... Trial? There's bound to be one.
But why would he say such a thing?
He's already saying it. And he was with you when the murder was planned, and again when it was carried out.
You sound as if you believe I knew all about it. Well, I suppose I did, in a way. Though I had a very different target in mind.
No, you must deny everything. You don't want to find yourself hanging with Bellingham.
No one with any sense would believe I'd help assassinate Spencer.
We're not talking about people with sense. We're talking about judges and barristers, the law.
Perhaps I should leave London at once.
The worst thing you could do. It would look even more suspicious, especially if you weren't at the funeral.
Whose funeral?
Spencer's, of course. Really, Clement, if you're going to be as stupid as this, nothing will help you escape justice.
But I haven't done anything for justice to be in pursuit of me.
What you've actually done doesn't matter. It's what the law will think you've done.
This is all that ambassador's fault. If he'd helped Bellingham in Russia...
You don't know Bellingham. Clement, they're going to trip you up on the first question.
Who will be asking me questions?
You're bound to be a witness at the trial.
Why should they pick on me? Dozens of people were there.
But not standing right next to Spencer. How did Bellingham know who to shoot? Clement, you didn't introduce them.
No. At least, I don't think so.
Thank goodness for that. Then how did he know Spencer?
I don't remember.
That's it. You can't remember a thing. Then, when you make a mistake, claim it's all blank in your mind. Oh, I'd better see Mr. Dunn. He's our solicitor. Is he pleading guilty, Mr. Dunn?
Bellingham might find it a bit difficult to claim he was somewhere else at the time. Half the Commons saw him shoot the Prime Minister.
I want you to be at the trial, Mr. Dunn, to advise us on... Not that we need advising.
No, absolutely not.
But there might be legal terms I'd like explained.
You plan to attend the trial yourself, Lady Hardy?
Yes.
Ladies don't usually attend.
Ladies don't usually have a cousin assassinated in the lobby of the House of Commons and a brother who witnessed it.
Though I wasn't in any way involved.
Don't worry, Mr. Guest. Those guilty will hang.
Those?
You think there might be someone else? Other people involved?
One never knows in these revolutionary days. The Prime Minister was most unpopular. Of course, the entire country is united in deep grief. Tragic loss to the nation. Tragic.
But you think Bellingham might have been part of a conspiracy?
We'll find out tomorrow, perhaps.
At the funeral?
At the trial.
It's tomorrow. That hardly gives us time to think. Not that we need to think about anything.
No, definitely not.
But why is it so soon?
Why delay? Bellingham is guilty.
Obviously.
But I thought you knew the trial was beginning tomorrow. Isn't that why you want me to attend? Because you'll be too overcome with grief after the funeral to concentrate?
That's it, exactly. And my brother will be equally overcome with grief. He'll be of no use whatsoever as a witness.
Don't worry, Lady Hardy. The doctor explained it all.
What doctor?
You see? He can't remember a thing.
Bellingham will hang because he's guilty. No other reason.
One would hope not.
Hardly worth the expense of a trial, really, but it might look bad for our judicial system if we just hang him without any formalities. And a day or two's delay won't matter.
A day or two? That's all it will take?
Time doesn't come into it. British justice takes the time it requires. No more, no less. So a couple of days should do it. He can't be executed on Sunday, of course. Too disrespectful. Monday it will be. A week to the day since he shot the Prime Minister. Rather appropriate, really.
A week?
And in that week he'll be treated fairly, with open-minded justice, right up to the moment we hang him.
He is guilty, Clement, without a doubt.
No one knows that better than you, Mr. Guest.
Why do you say that? Why should I know better than anyone else?
Because you saw him shoot Spencer.
Oh, yes. Yes, so I did.
His memory, Mr. Dunn. Terrible business.
The sympathy of the country will support you. Take no notice of the newspapers. They're all infected with radical ideas. I'm sure the Prime Minister will be greatly missed, no matter what the editors write. And ignore the street ballads, too.
The prosecution case is very simple. The defendant, John Bellingham, murdered the Prime Minister, Spencer Percival, in the lobby of the House of Commons on May the 11th, 1812.
That's it.
I said it was simple, m'lad.
My client pleads guilty, m'lad.
Then why are we wasting time? I can go straight on to sentencing. John Bellingham, the sentence of the court upon you is that you be taken from this place to a prison
execution. M'lad, Mr. Bellingham would like to exercise his right to address the court before he is sentenced.
That's you. Just tell me. He said he was guilty.
He'd like to explain why.
Why he did it is of no consequence. Unless he is going to claim he shot the Prime Minister in self-defense.
No, m'lad.
Just as well. It might bring our Parliament into disrepute. If there were gun battles in the Commons, what would the French say?
Mr. Bellingham will explain how the situation...
Then let him say whatever he's going to say. This is England. A man on trial for his life has the legal right to speak before he's sentenced to hang. Though I hope he isn't going to take all day about it. We do have other cases to get through this afternoon.
Mr. Bellingham promises to be brief.
No, I don't.
Yes, he does.
Get on with it, then.
No one will listen to what Bellingham says, will they, Mr. Dunn?
They have to, Lady Hardy. He is still only the accused, even if we all know he's guilty.
But he's a murderer. His word can't be relied on.
No, it can't be. He wasn't encouraged in the least.
Mr. Dunn, couldn't you object to Bellingham speaking?
I'm not altogether sure the judge would listen to me, as I'm not involved in the case.
Yet.
Piccadilly. I beg your pardon?
Nothing. Just thinking aloud.
I was in St. Petersburg.
St. Petersburg? Was St. Petersburg in Russia?
Yes. Yeah, I went there 5 years ago.
5 years ago? The court is only concerned with what you did last Monday.
But it all started in St. Petersburg 5 years ago.
You met Spencer Percival then?
No, I never met him. Well, except on the day I shot him, of course.
Then Russia is irrelevant.
No, it's not. It's the reason I killed Spencer Percival.
As you admit.
It's his own fault I shot him. If he had written to me, I might...
Why should the British Prime Minister write to you?
Well, I wrote to him 3 times. He didn't reply.
His manners might have been bad, but I can't regard that as any sort of excuse for gunning him down.
I was desperate. I needed help to survive, and he ignored me. So, I decided to travel to London.
Oh, no. Yeah. Not the journey to London.
I can explain everything.
Clement, there's nothing to explain, remember? Or rather, don't remember.
I was forgetting...
Then, for goodness sake, go on, forget it.
I had just enough money left for the coach fare, nothing more. In fact, I wouldn't have had anything to eat on the way but for the kindness of another traveller.
Clement!
Eating kept him quiet.
Silence in court!
I didn't... That other traveller didn't know what was going to happen.
Details of your diet are irrelevant.
But because Percival refused to compensate me, I had no money left at all.
English law makes no distinction between rich and poor. Your finances or lack of them are irrelevant.
Well, they weren't to me. I've been ruined.
The law isn't interested in that. We can't have politicians shot by paupers. Where would it end if MPs were answerable when they ruined people's lives? This isn't France, thank God.
But everything I'd worked for had gone. I was
All the law requires to know is if you shot the Prime Minister.
Yeah, of course I did. There are dozens of witnesses if you don't believe me.
I hope we can believe you. Perjury is a serious matter. You could be imprisoned a very long time for it if you weren't going to be hanged instead.
How much longer will Bellingham be allowed to speak, Mr. Dunn?
As long as justice requires him to speak. Perhaps a few seconds more. The judge must be getting hungry.
So, inflamed by radical nonsense, you decided to copy the French and destroy the structures of society in an attempt...
The French had nothing to do with it. Percival refused to take responsibility for the negligence of government officials. He should have helped me. Anyone would agree. Why? Even Percival's own cousin agreed with me that he
was... We're here because of what the law says. Whether or not someone's cousin agrees with it is irrelevant.
Percival's cousin?
We're a large family, Mr. Dunn. Hundreds of cousins.
If not more. So Bellingham might know someone in the family? Someone radical?
Who can say? Our cousin Samuel has very odd acquaintances in the north of England. Poets. They're a bad influence.
It's all Percival's fault that I'm about to die. So, it was only justice that he should be dead first.
The Prime Minister might well deserve to be shot, but the law is very clear on this point. We are not allowed to do it.
But I did do it.
And I can't ignore the fact. Attendance at the Commons is poor enough without MPs dodging gunshot whenever they walk into the lobby.
Percival's own cousin agrees I was right.
The law, however, cannot agree. And the law's opinion coincides with mine, as it happens. You're guilty of murder.
Yes, I know.
Poor Bellingham. He knew he'd be sentenced to hang.
Clement, we couldn't possibly know what was going through his mind.
No, of course not. No idea at all.
I understand why you wanted me to attend the trial, Lady Hardy.
What do you mean, Mr. Dunn?
It might be a good idea to get your cousin out of London for a while.
Clement is my brother.
Oh, the cousin Bellingham mentioned. Coleridge, the radical poet.
Oh, you mean Samuel, not Clement.
Questions might be asked about which cousin Bellingham claimed to know. Better if Coleridge isn't here to answer them. Of course, we all know he would never have agreed that the Prime Minister deserved to be shot, but his extreme views about politics have been known for years. His articles in the Courier are sometimes a little forcefully expressed. Very vivid use of language.
I'll see that he leaves London as soon as possible.
But Samuel never met Bellingham.
Of course he didn't, Mr. Guest. And luckily, Bellingham won't be around much longer to claim that he did.
Poor Bellingham. Tried, convicted, and hanged within a week.
Where are Tom and Samuel? Coach will be leaving soon.
Oh, poor Bellingham. He had nothing left to live for.
Then he couldn't have minded a public execution outside Newgate Prison half as much as you would, Clement. Besides, he did murder someone.
You didn't meet him.
Clement, neither did you.
He knew he'd die. He knew that in the coach. No plan of escape at all.
You must stop talking about him.
Does it matter what I say? Everyone thinks I'm due in Bedlam any day now, thanks to you.
You sure you'll be all right? I wish you'd stay a little longer.
I'm not ill.
Of course you're not.
Well, then stop using that tone of voice. Besides, someone's got to get Samuel out of London now that you seem to have turned him into the chief suspect.
It won't hurt Samuel or his reputation. Don't tell him anything, though. The entire world would know all about it in a week.
And I'd be in another poem before the month was out.
I've sent some money to Sarah and the children, as Samuel won't. Charlotte is taking it there for me. Mm. Clement, I know you don't want to talk about Charlotte.
Another time would be better.
She gave me this letter. Hope you'll read it.
Perhaps.
And write to her?
Perhaps.
It's time you stopped brooding on the past.
Well, you make me sound like Bellingham.
He's in the past, too. It's over for him. Just tell yourself you never met him. It happened to someone else.
I want to forget the whole thing as soon as possible.
Having Samuel for company should stop you thinking. He has that effect on me, anyway. Mm. Try to talk him out of writing that autobiography and keep him away from the laudanum.
Oh, some things are beyond human power.
And in your autobiography, you could explain what Nelson actually said.
Of course, Tom. But I'll need some money to keep myself while I write the book.
Emma Hamilton has been so distant ever since Trafalgar. Mm. I explained the whole thing, but she just said very coldly that Nelson had never spoken in Arabic to her. You can spell kismet, can't you, Samuel?
Of course I can. But I'll need money while...
Hurry up! The coach is leaving in a minute.
Clement, what is all this rush to get me out of London?
I've no idea what you mean, Samuel.
Of course you know. But I can't say it's unwelcome to get away. I'd run out of people who'd lend me money. And I didn't leave a forwarding address.
Very sensible in your case.
Well, it was Quinta's idea. She isn't usually so understanding about my difficulties.
I'd say she understood you.
Well, perhaps she's hoping for a mention in my autobiography.
It might be wiser not to write about Spencer in your book.
I'd lose some of my best jokes if I didn't mention his fiscal policy.
I know. I'm sorry, but you might be misunderstood.
No. I'll make it very clear what I thought of him.
That's what you mustn't do.
Why not?
Well, you'd understand if you knew the week I've just... the week a friend of mine has just had. Mm-hmm. Through practically no fault of his own, he could have been accused of conspiracy to murder.
Who did he conspire to murder?
No one. No one at all. He was almost entirely innocent. He hadn't the least idea that a murder was being planned in front of him. Well, he did notice a murder plan, but it definitely was not the murder he was so nearly on trial for. You understand what I'm saying?
No.
Laudanum obviously affects the brain.
Oh, I didn't know you were addicted to it as well.
The whole thing was the ambassador's fault, anyway, if you ask me. Ask my friend, I mean. So now, do you see why you shouldn't write anything about Spencer in your book?
No.
But I've just explained the whole thing to you in detail. How much laudanum did you take?
I didn't have the money to buy any. I wish I had got my hands on some. Your story might make sense then.
What I've just told you is in the strictest confidence. Mm. You must promise not to write a poem about it.
I think I can safely promise that. Possibly even without being bribed.
But of course, you'll accept cash?
Of course. Look on it as your contribution to English literature.
Or to the laudanum trade.
Bellingham and the Ambassador was written by Mary Baker. Clement Guest was played by James Fleet. Quinta Hardy by Celia Imrie. Percival by David Horovitch. Coleridge by David Collings. The Judge by Derek Waring. Dunn by Geoffrey Whitehead. And Yeats by Martin Hyder. The play was directed by Cherry Cookson.
A story by Charles Dickens provides the basis for Thursday's afternoon play. Paul Scofield plays George Silverman, a man trying to escape from his mother's image of him. She always drummed into him that he was nothing more than a worldly little devil. George is determined to prove her wrong. He wants to be a good man. Throughout his life, he attempts to be beyond reproach. but somehow, despite his best endeavours, every important choice he makes tends to reinforce his mother's prophecy. Perhaps now, at the end of his life, he can escape from his past by telling his story, setting the record straight. But like anything in life, storytelling involves making choices, and those choices can be good or bad. Paul Scofield stars in George Silverman's Explanation on Thursday afternoon at 2:15.
BBC Radio 4, the news at 3:00. American military commanders have confirmed that US soldiers in the Iraqi town of Fallujah opened fire last night on a demonstration. The head of the local hospital says 13 people were killed. The Americans say they only returned fire after they'd come under attack. Demetha Luthra reports from Baghdad.
Local residents are accusing the Americans of firing on an unarmed crowd. They say that some 200 students were protesting at the Americans using their school as a military barracks. American forces give an entirely different account.